Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 11, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Glad to have you back, bud.
Yeah, home for less than a week.
Less than a week, yeah. How do you do it, man? How do you, at least this time you didn't have to change too much of a time zone, but how do you go from Eastern to Central to Western back to East? How do you do it?
You know, I'm getting that more and more as I travel. People come up to me like, man, you travel a lot. You really, do you still enjoy it? And the answer is, yeah, I mean, I love traveling. Obviously, the parts of it that I don't, but yeah, it can get a little odd from time to time. The big thing for me is these trips where we're going from hotel to hotel every night. Yeah. If I'm at one place and I can just unpack and relax, then it's a little different. But yeah, when you have to find, okay, I got to put my dirty clothes on this side of the suitcase tonight because tomorrow I'm going to need to pull these other ones out.
Right.
And that's where it kind of gets a little annoying. And that kind of was the fact. On this last trip, it was a different hotel every night almost. But other than that, no, I mean, I'm not complaining. I enjoy it, and somehow I adjust to it.
That's always the thing that I always like to... I'd like to write that story one of these days for the magazine about traveling with the players who travel and how they what their tips are for adjusting to time zones and eating schedules and, you know, that kind of stuff. Because I tell you, every time we go to Vegas or California or wherever it is, we have to go out there and then we come back, I'm shot for a week, man.
Yeah.
And I really am, and I just don't know how you do it. I mean, I guess if you do it for a short period of time, it's okay, but if I got to go somewhere for like a week and then come home and try, oh, man, it just kills me. My eyes, they just close on me way ahead of schedule, or they stay open way too long or whatever. I just can't do it. I don't know how you do it, buddy, but I'm glad
you Well, you know, that's a great idea on the traveling because, I mean, the big thing that kills me is, I'm fat, as you know. trying to be less fat, and... That's the biggest thing for. I mean, I don't care who what you're traveling for. That's the biggest thing because you're not at home to cook your meals. You're eating out, and you don't really have a lot of options sometimes. And then it's hard to work out too. I mean, all these hotels now have fitness centers, but you know, it's not like when I'm there, I'm working.
Yeah, right.
I don't have time to go down there and
Yeah, big walk executive 5 miles. Comes to you and says, "Hey, I want to meet with you at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. We'll talk about Big Ad deal." And you say, "Nah, I gotta go to the treadmill and burn off some of that." Chinese buffet I had last night.
Yeah, have you seen me, sir?
They'll get in the sauna.
But yeah, I mean, for players that particularly poker, and the other thing about poker players too. I mean, we're getting a little off tangent here, but it kind of jives with the main topic later on. But I played a couple longer tournaments this trip, which we'll talk about. But I mean, just sitting there. I mean, again, we've talked about this 100 times, but I'm just sitting there. Looking around the table of people, and I'm just like, I really do not know how people do this for a living.
Yeah.
I mean, just the sitting at the table for hours on end.
Yeah.
Take away the travel that we're talking about, the eating poorly, the not working out, being inside, not seeing the sun. just a grind. So, yeah. I mean, that's a good idea. We should start doing some surveys on that.
Yeah.
I'm curious how many people have fallen off of the circuit just because they can't handle it anymore because of all those reasons.
And try to disprove my theory that all poker pros are vampires.
Yes.
Because they don't need to see the sun. They want to be inside, during the daylight. So. But, yeah, we'll get to all your fun. Well, we'll see if they're funny stories at the main topic today. But, we had a lot of people asking us stuff about O'Malley recently. Mm-hmm. I think he's got, a PR firm working for him. I don't know. People asking about O'Malley, asking things about him, what his favorite color is, and people asking, what does he like to eat on Sundays, because I'm going to have him over for dinner. And so, we're like, okay, well, what? How about some poker-related questions about O'Malley? And someone's like, hey, what are his stats? How has he been doing And it was pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, O'Malley actually went back and looked over it and sent us the stats. And the funny thing is, when he sent that email, I was actually thinking, literally the day before he sent the email, how cool it would have been for us to track how each of us had done. I'm sure if I had to get to see, he had, 37 O'Malley moves he's had so far. And I'm going to guess I was right on 3.
And those are the 3 times you agreed with me.
And you're going to be right probably 35 times.
Yeah.
Because you always take the easy way out.
Yeah, take the easy way out. But no, I'm wrong often. And but the stats were
there
very
are no wrong, though. Huh? There are no wrong in poker, though.
No, I know, but...
as long as you learn from your mistakes.
It's funny because I wonder... you know, when I hear O'Malley talk and reason things out, I always think that he's got to be a winning poker player. You know what I mean? He's an avid fan of the show, and he plays often. These are all live hands, so he's getting that many hands to put on the show. Clearly, he's playing enough. So I always think of him as a winning player, but when you look at his stats, he's not. 17 wins, 18 losses, and 2 chopped pots.
Which still qualify him for a college football bowl game, though.
That's right, or the NHL or NBA playoffs.
playoffs.
but I kind of like that. I mean, that's some serious balanced you know, statage there. I mean, 17, 18, and 2. That's pretty cool.
Well, you know, the one thing I really like about it is you can... I mean, obviously, he's picking hands to do the move, right?
Yeah.
And not that he has a ton of hands to choose from, but there is part of you that would think, you know, hey, let's pick hands where I win, you know, make me look better. And obviously, he's not if he's picking half and half here. Obviously, since he had to go back and tabulate it himself, he's not picking hands based off of those stats. Maybe he will now. But up until now, he hasn't been, so it's kind of cool how that works out.
Well, just to know that we've had about 400 or so hands of the week, and it's 399 losses and 1 win. Those are the stats of our hand of the week. So, O'Malley, nice job being balanced, because hand of the week is always a loser, almost.
370 bad beats, too.
Yeah, that's right.
220 straight flushes.
And every single one of them, the person who sent in the hand of the week had just built up their stack somehow to a lot of chips that they could afford to lose.
We should work for the Census Bureau with all these stats.
That's right.
Oh, man. Well, you know, one of my favorite things on the show is mangling the English language. And one of our good listeners, Jammin' Drummond's favorite thing about the show is sending us the word of the day from dictionary.com. And I think this is like the second or third one he's showing sent us to us. Yeah, and he has a knack for finding a different definition for words that really should be poker related but aren't. And so this week he sent us, and it actually came with a pronunciation, so I'm going to see if I can get it right here. Antipanopinet. Oh, I got screwed.
Not even close. Read the actual thing. Read the actual.
Antipanopinet. It's a tongue twister. Antepenultimate.
Yeah, now, one thing I want to know is it's A-N-T-E-E and then P-I. Is that P? Or is it P? So it's antepenultimate.
I've always had this problem with the little pronunciation guides. And sometimes I need a pronunciation guide for the pronunciation guide. Yeah, really, because it says pi. Wouldn't it be P-I-E there?
Yeah, well, the other thing, too, is when you pronounce that word without the word ante in front of it, it's penultimate, not penultimate. So why are they making it penultimate in this one?
Incorrectly all this time.
Maybe we have. I thought it was penultimate.
I haven't been pronouncing it at all.
That's true.
So I haven't been doing it wrong. But anyhow, the definition from dictionary.com is third from the end.
Ante penultimate. Third from the end.
Mm-hmm. Now you're just showing off by saying it.
No, I'm not. I'm just getting used to saying it.
But Jammin's definition would be the new cutoff button jack seat below for anti-up nationers. Nationers?
Nationers.
He's making up words, too. That's going to be a new one.
I think it would be nationals.
Yeah.
So he wants to know if it's the new cutoff because third from the button, right?
He's renaming the assassination seat.
A much more politically correct title for the seat. So I like it. Anti-penultimate. And if you look really close, you can find Annie up in that word. So I like it.
That's true. I can also see a schooner in there.
A schooner.
Oh, but you know, I love jamming, but I'm just gonna say I don't think this is gonna take off because that's way too many syllables for me.
You know what though? I really think that we should, like, if I write a strategy column or a column that resembles strategy in the magazine, I'm gonna try to make it right to put it in there and say, so he's in the anti-penultimate seat, and not even explain it. Just let it go and see if anybody writes it.
See if it takes off.
That's awesome. Third from the end. I mean, that's what it is. That's brilliant jamming. That's brilliant stuff, man. Appreciate it.
And if you said he was playing from the anti-penultimate seat with 2-9 of clubs, then we know people would notice.
You were with 2-9 of clubs.
I'm sorry, 9 of spades.
Jerk. My mom. Luke's got one $120. He's rich, Ma. He's going to retire. He's selling me the business. All right, we got a hotline, 813-448-1120. This one comes from Thietza. I think we'll talk a little bit about it afterwards. So let's hear it, our good friend Thietza.
Just listening to the podcast, and you were talking about the good karma, bad karma. About 10, 11 years ago, I went into a satellite, $2,500 satellite, $250 into $2,500 satellite, and they gave me the wrong ticket. And when I sat down, I realized it. So they tell me, oh, you can go back and, you know, get your money back, and I decided not to get off the supermarket line, right? And I played the event. The first one was supposed to be 1 in 20. This one was 1 in 40 for the 10K event. And I came in, they paid 3 spots, 2 tickets, and cash for the 3rd spot. I came in 3rd. Well, there were 4 of us left, and 4th, they wanted to give 4th place some money, and I was short stacked, and the other guy who was short stacked with me decided he didn't want to shop, didn't want to take any money. He wanted his 3rd place, 1st place, whatever. And so I busted him, and I took 3rd place money because at that time I was not ready to play a 10-day event. And for $250, I won $77.50, and that was good luck. I'm glad I didn't cash it out, returned my ticket, and pretty well.
Serendipitous. See, look at all these big words we have this week. It's just not fair.
Yeah, you know, we had asked the Nation to send us all their serendipitous moments, and that's what we got right there. So
that's what we got, yeah.
So we're glad that, you know, I know why, because there aren't any serendipitous moments in poker. That's why we didn't get anybody to write in. It took her 10 years to find one. She had to go back 10 years to think of one.
Well, because everything's a mathematical calculation, so, you know.
That's right.
You only get emotion in serendipitous moment. And take emotion out of poker, then you have no serendipitous moments.
But that was cool for her. I still kind of didn't understand. They gave her the wrong ticket. So she spent the same money she would have spent, but they sent her to the wrong tournament, I guess? I don't know.
Kind of sounds like way.
Yeah, I guess so. But that's cool. I bet you she's probably still living off that net cash.
Yeah.
10 years ago. It's probably her bankroll from 10 years ago.
Yeah, and of course, we should have talked about Jerry Yang when we're talking about this, right? Because then he had the ultimate one where he busted out of that satellite tournament, and there are two roads, right?
Yeah.
One went home to his family. The other one went to the other casino with another satellite, and he chose to go to that one, won the satellite, and the rest is history.
Yeah, that was the anti-penultimate story, though, not the the ultimate. Because then he went on to play in the World Series, and then made the November 9, or whatever you want to call it then, final table.
But yes, had he gone home to the family, no one would ever know who Jerry Yang is, other than the people who know who he is.
Unless you believe in destiny, and he was destined to win that tournament no matter what road he took. He would have found another way to the World Series that year.
Okay. Yeah, but
depends
we don't...
on your, on what you think.
All right, Thietza, we know we've sent you plenty of swag, but we'll remind everyone else to call the hotline at 813-448-1120, and we'll send you something absolutely tremendous, like a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Ante Up. Pick up your own decks in the Ante Up store at anteupstore.com.
Okay, our mailbag comes from Lee in Maryland, and I remember writing to him about this, too. So, a player checks in the dark. What does this mean? Does it mean anything? Is he or she usually strong, showing weakness? or a week hoping to hit a draw. How do you react when you're with a player that does this, or should it generally be ignored?
First of all, I think Adele should write a song called Checking in the Dark. It'll take over Crazy Game of Poker as the biggest poker song ever, I think. I wonder if she plays poker.
I would rather have the song be called Rolling in the Cash.
Rolling in the Cash.
That would sound much better to me.
It's a little more crass, though.
But, you know, when we got this email, at first I wanted to know if Lee wanted to know what checking in the dark meant. Because yes. It kind of... But what they... It was a little another level is what Lee meant.
Right.
In other words,
exactly.
What do you think it means to you? Why is this person doing it? So, when that happens to me, I generally just play the hand the way I want to play. I don't care what they're doing. It makes no difference. You know, I mean, I think of... You know, all right, so they're giving up their, you know, ability to do anything no matter what this flop is. I would never do that. I would never check dark because I never know what that flop is going to be, and that flop could change the optimal way to react to the hand. So I would never do it myself, but when they do it, generally it's a weak play. You know, the reason why Phil Hellmuth does it is because he really is an incredible reader of people's tells or reactions or their souls, whatever he likes to use for words. But, you know, he's the one who's famously doing it on television when you do see it. And the reason he's doing it is because he wants to stare at you and watch you react to the cards. And he thinks he'll pick up something. He doesn't always have a hand. He doesn't have a particular hand. It's just that's what he likes to do. Me, I think it's most time it's pretty weak because most people doing that don't have any idea what a tell is. So,
or why they're even doing it.
Yeah, or why they're doing it. So...
I think it's another one of these things where just you have to know your player, which is always the answer no one wants to hear.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some people actually, it could be, there is some strategy involved in it. You know, if you check in the dark and then you get your opponent to bet out and then you're like, spring on them if you want because they think you're weak by doing it. And you're really strong, which is kind of what he's getting at. But a lot of times it is that they're weak. You know, I see it most often in Omaha, high-low. Where actually, you know, the cards do make a huge difference in how you play your hand at that point. That's not a reason to do it, but I just happen to see it more often there than I do in Hold'em. I don't really understand it in Hold'em too much. It doesn't seem to make much sense there. In Omaha, I could probably put together a case for it if I was on the anti-up debate team and was tasked with defending it. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I'm just going to play the same way. I mean, sometimes I'm just going to check behind. Usually it's people looking to spring a trap on you. If you check behind, then you screw them. They lose a street of value.
What I like to do, though, is I like to, if I'm going to do that and they say check dark, I go check dark too.
Yeah.
And then I don't have to react to anything. I just wait to see them see the turn. Are they going to really check the turn dark too? At that point, I would look at the cards. But I mean, yes, if that ever happens to me, sometimes I'll do that. But generally, I just play the hand normally. Don't even care.
Yeah, in this last Omaha tournament I played a couple days ago, we had three check darks in a row in that hand. With three players, I mean.
Oh, okay, three players.
So, yeah, check dark. So do I.
Yeah, that's the good way to combat it, because then you're not giving away anything.
Essentially being as ridiculous as the person doing it to show them how ridiculous they're being.
Exactly. I mean, like I said, if you have an innate ability to be able to read people and you want to see their reaction when the cards come out and not be distracted by your own thinking of the cards or whatever, maybe. But generally, these people that you're playing against, if you're listening to our show, you're probably not playing against anybody who has that ability. So you're probably playing against people who just saw it on TV and thought it'd be funny to do it themselves or, you know, whatever. So I would just play the hand straightforward.
All right, Lee, we appreciate the mailbag question. Remind everybody else to send your mailbag questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll send you something wonderful like we're going to send Lee today a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store.
Now, I know your favorite part of the show is the feedback when we get it. And we always seem to get feedback. I mean, the entire show so far has been feedback. O'Malley and Drummond and Dietze and Lee. So it's basically all feedback. But Scott likes to give as many of the Anti-Up Nationals a chance to be on the show. So.
Well, particularly when they're funny and they're coming from rabid fans of the show.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a double word score at that point.
They're our regulars. They're, you know, they're the ones who sit at the end of the bar when they walk in. They say, Bernie's! Like we're going to do right now. Bernie's cute. She said, regarding the letter about that movie where the guy calls literally for his life with the second nuts, why is this so shocking? I have observed many online players who clearly would rather die than fold. And with a lot worse than the second nuts. Online poker, I miss you, she says. I literally laughed out loud. You know when to do LOL? That's everybody's response these days to everything funny now. They don't really, really laugh out loud. But when I read this, I laughed out loud when I read this. It was LOL.
I generally do laugh out loud. I'm a jolly, jolly pole, though. So.
That's true. Anything makes you laugh, buddy.
But you know what was funny about this, too? In one of the tournaments, I was overhearing somebody talk. And they were talking about that, you know, the hand from the quadrillion drop thing this summer. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where the guy allegedly folded quads to, or folded, he didn't allegedly fold quads, but folded quads to allegedly a straight flush. Mm-hmm. And all people were like, there's no way I'm folding quads, I'm sorry. And I'm like, I'm going to say, yeah, well, there's no way you're going to fold top two pair either. I've seen you play, so... Not a shocking development to hear that you're not going to fold what could be the second best hand at worst, you know?
See, now that was an S-L-O-L moment. That was a sincere laugh out loud moment I just had with you. I think that's going to catch on. S-L-O-L.
S-L-O-L.
Although people might get it confused with S-O-L.
Oh, I'm slowing all through this show.
Slowing. Slowing in the D.
Boy, Adele's gonna own the India Poker Cast by the end of the show.
Yeah, she's not gonna be happy when she hears this stuff. She's gonna throw us the finger. Have you seen that where she flips the people off at the award show or whatever?
Oh no, no.
Yeah, they cut her off too early, and she flips off the producers of the award show. It's like the London Grammys or something.
Hey, no one cuts off Adele.
Okay, it is January. It's getting close. The Red Rock Casino Resort Spa in Las Vegas is going to host the next NEA Poker Tour event January 21st to 27th. Scott's going to be there. Go down there, say hi. Take a shot at him. Try to make him S-L-O-L. And also try to make the cover of the NEA magazine by entering the main event and winning it. Special NEA room rates are $89. You can see everything you want to know about the AUPT events at andyuppokertour.com.
And, of course, the Hard Rock Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic is now accepting bookings for the Antioch Poker Tour World Championship event July 28th to August 3rd at the luxurious all-inclusive resort. And I want to be clear, I mentioned all-inclusive.
Yes.
Since we got people on the forum saying, well, the hotel rate's so expensive. Well, it's because you get everything.
Yes. And
it's
more.
Actually cheaper than staying at home.
Everything and more.
Everything.
I'm thinking about moving there.
Includes food, booze. You can even call home. That's how much stuff they included there. Plus resort credit, so very good deal. And while you're there, we have 14 tournaments with buy-ins as low as $100, with the winner of the $1,100 main event appearing on the cover of Antioch Magazine. Great. All-inclusive room rates. And once again, all-inclusive means everything. For adults and children, we'll make this a great poker and or family vacation this year. More information at antiupmagazine.com/world championship. Including how you can win your way there at Dover Downs and coming soon, Thunder Valley Casino and Resort.
Cool. And you know, I get reminded every day by my wife that the cruise is right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Little's going to be on at this time, too. I'm real excited about that. Our February 4th cruise, Port Canaveral, our last sailing. I miss you, Monarch. And as Scott often points out, we're past our guarantee rate, but if you book as soon as possible, we'll try to get you the best thing possible. And we're sailing out of Miami, New York City, and Tampa this year as well. So get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs, Daytona Beach Kennel Club, and Seneca Salamanca at AntiUpCruises.com.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people are calling me still. I'm still getting 3 to 4 calls a day.
Poker players, man, late to the last minute, that's all they do.
And even some of them, usually they start off with, hey, is there still any openings? Which makes, that's a legitimate question, right? Because we'll bust a rate getter into deadline. We're sailing with literally in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Some people are, hey, I heard maybe you might have a cruise coming up in February. When are you going to know more about that?
That's pushing it right there. Jeez.
Well, they're ecstatic when I can give them exact details and I can tell them I can book them today. Wow, that's great.
Oh, man. Hey, so while you were away, some interesting things happened around the country in poker. So let's see what piled up on the NDF news desk.
The Nevada Gaming Control Board has submitted a draft bill to that state's legislature that would allow the governor to enter into agreements with other states allowing online poker.
See, that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. And I was not surprised by this at all. You know, everyone knows that the bill was dead, the fiscal cliff, all that stuff. So Nevada's saying, you know what? Other states are going to do what we already did. Let's team up. And you knew it's going to happen. Eventually, we're going to have, like, federal gaming without federal ruling.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It's going to be a national game without national rules.
It'll be very interesting to see how this works out, and then to see if Congress actually turns around someday and go, hey, look what happened since we didn't do anything.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how all congressmen talk to. Hey, this stinks.
That's kind of how I feel like they should talk, with how little work they're actually doing.
That's right. It's incredible.
But, yeah, I mean, if they can make that work, I mean, here's what's going to happen. The first time that, I mean, it doesn't matter if Nevada approves the bill. I don't know how fast it would get through the thing and the governor signs it. It doesn't do anything unless there's another state that also has the same exact bill, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Governor Sandoval can't just go out there and go, hey, you can put your players in ours. You know, they got to be able to do it. But once that first connection happens, then I think you're going to start seeing, like, this boulder down the mountain. Everybody says, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, what's holding us back is that we don't have enough people in our state. But now if you can join this mega Powerball thing, which works for everyone, let's get moving, and that would make it work. So
that's right, we'll call it the mega poker ball is what we'll call it. Power poker ball. There you go.
Or the mega ball. Do you ever seen Semi-Pro?
Yeah, sure. I did see that.
Very underappreciated movie, I think.
Yeah.
I still don't know what the Mega Ball is. It's the Mega Ball!
Okay, John Dolan of Biloxi, Mississippi is Anti-Up's 2012 Player of the Year. Dolan earned nearly 2,000 points over the course of the year, earning points in four events, including winning the main event of the Million Dollar Heater at Belle Ravage. The race for 2013's Player of the Year begins this week in the main event of the World Series of Poker Circuit at Bicycle Casino in Los Angeles. Read more about Dolan in the 2012 race in the February issue of Anti Up later this month. You know, if a lot of people might remember Dolan, he's a November Niner, and he also was from Florida. He originally played and he dealt at the little Jefferson County Kennel Club for a while there. And I sent him a bunch of questions, and he answered them very, very honestly. He was really candid, and I really liked his answer, so it's going to be a real good interview.
Looking forward to seeing it, and I think the next year is going to be really good. We get a lot more events next year, so...
Yes, because of the Anti-Up Poker Tour.
Yeah, absolutely, and, you know, I think people out there think that it's... You got to play these big events like John Dolan plays to win it, but next year I think you could put together a pretty good portfolio of points just playing in stuff like even $100 buy-in events.
Right.
I'm just playing enough, and you have to be good. You have to make the final table.
Yeah, you have to make the final table, but still, there's still a chance. I mean, it's not absolutely. Like you just have to enter $1,100 and $3,000 events to win.
Very true.
So...
All right, and finally, in official confirmation that God is a poker player, media officials at the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure in the Bahamas have taken the unusual step of alerting media that Olympic swimming champion Michael Phelps was playing the main event, but his management team has requested that no members of the media approach him for interviews.
So we go the entire spectrum there. We go from Dolan, who is... not only approachable via email and texting and give me all these honest answers, to the most famous Olympic person on the planet saying, I can't talk to you. What is that? This explains why when he talked to, well, I guess it was Bob Costas at Olympic Village or whatever it was, and they were saying, what's your future hold? And he didn't say one word about poker. It's like he doesn't want anybody to know, even though he was there rooting on Antonio Esfandiari at some tournament out west and, you know, whatever. Now we can't even talk to him when he enters an event? What is that?
Well, that's what I'm saying, man. God could be at his table and like, hey, you know, you guys can talk to me. I'm approachable. But no, in all seriousness, I mean, I can kind of see what the problem is. I mean, let's think about it. If we were there, we obviously would want to talk to him, right?
Yeah.
And we're respectable journalists, right? And unfortunately, in the poker business, there's lots of other poker media people that are a little less professional than we are, right? So, if the fact that we would want to go talk to him, I can imagine him just getting swarmed. And when you're at the table playing, and this is, from my understanding, his first big event, right?
Yeah.
He's played a bunch of cash games and things, but I mean, I don't know what the buy-in was for the main event. Was it 10,000 down there?
I don't know if it was 10 or 5, 000, but whatever it was. Still a big event.
But you can imagine, you don't want people coming up in between every hand bugging you to, hey, so tell us about the Olympics.
Did they really pee in the pool?
Yeah, you know, stuff like that. So I can understand that. Now, what I would, it was to me, it was just kind of a jarring release.
Yeah, it was.
It was said, you know, hey, Michael Phelps' management team has respectfully asked that media not approach him during the tournament, but there will be a media access event, 7 p.m. in the Carnival Room. I don't know. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly. No, I was thinking exactly the same thing. That you then you arrange something.
Then it'd be a little
something.
Different. But yeah. It wasn't that, and not only that, but like no media should approach him. Was in all caps.
Yeah.
Like under. Under penalty of spending the rest of your life in a Bahamian jail, do you ever approach Michael Phelps? Talk to him.
You know, you're absolutely right, though. They should have said, hey, you know what? When they break for dinner or when he gets eliminated, we'll have one conference at the end or something, you know. But to make it that way, it makes you feel stupid. It's like, hey, wait a minute. Now, he's no different than anybody else. I'm here to do a job. If I want to interview him, I'm going to try to interview him. You know, and that's what's going to happen. Now people are going to get belligerent and still try to talk to him, and now you've made it worse.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering what the next step is. I mean, are other poker players going to go down this road? Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Hey, I'm too important to be bugged. I want to have my management team let the media know I am not to be bothered.
Good. We don't want to give you publicity anyway, then.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, that's going to be our response. Okay. You know, lots of other people to talk to.
That's why we changed our magazine. That's why we made our magazine. Or that's why we came out with this magazine. So we wouldn't have to worry about egos like that. If you want to talk to us, talk to us. If you don't, hey, that's okay, because we got plenty of people who want to be in a magazine. Unbelievable. Hey, you know, we get to finish on O'Malley's move today. That's correct, right?
Absolutely.
Very excited. Let's refresh our memories right now with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em cash game. The action's been fairly stable all night, not too many maniacs, and our cards have been running fairly even. The blind's post, and it's folded all the way around to the cutoff, who makes it $8 to go. A standard raise. This opponent is a pretty savvy player. She knows the game well and plays solid. This raise here is pretty tough to read. It could be a legitimate hand, like jacks or ace-king, or it could be some kind of a steal with 7-6 suited, or even some kind of trash. Interestingly enough, we go through all this in our head before we even look down at our cards. The 5 of hearts, 5 of diamonds. Yeah, we call. We'll have position the whole way, and we outchip her roughly 300 to 250. The blinds fold, and bingo, the flop comes the 10 of spades, 10 of hearts, 5 of clubs. There's $19 in the pot, and our opponent takes her time before checking. Normally, we'd want to check here also, but if she has something like low suited connectors, we're not getting anything else out of her anyway. If it's ace-king or ace-queen, we're pretty sure she'd take a flyer on a turn, as well as any pairs greater than fives. So we lead out for $10, which is our standard bet. She calls, $39 in the pot, and the turn is, yuck, the 10 of diamonds. Once again, our opponent checks. Pretty tricky. Is she really that strong that she feels she can give us a free card? Or is she hoping to hit a Broadway card on the river to boat up herself? We check right behind. The pot stands at $39, and the river is the 3 of spades. This time she carefully counts out $25 and puts it neatly into the pot. What do we do?
You know what? I don't feel real terrific about this. In fact, actually, I'm pretty sure we're probably going to lose here. But here's the thing. Our opponent set a decent price for us, right?
Yeah.
At this point, it doesn't seem like it makes sense to fold. Definitely not going to raise here because I think we're bad. But I'm going to call. It was a cheap price. Bet a little bit too much, more than I probably would fold. But I mean, $25 into this pot? Yeah, I'll take a shot.
Yeah, I agree. I just have to call here. I won't raise. There's no way I'm raising here. You know, the person could have ace 3 or 4-4 or 10. There are a lot of hands that I beat. There are a lot of hands that beat us. So, it's a good price, like you said. I can't be really confident that I'm ahead, so I'm just going to call and hope I win. And if I don't, I got some information for it, and it wasn't too expensive. Didn't hurt me too much. All right, that was simple. Usually it's a little more difficult than that, but
yeah, well, we'll find out how simple it was.
All right, let's see part two.
Hello again. What hands do we beat that are conceivable to her range? Ace-king, ace-queen, ace-jack, king-queen, king-jack maybe? What hands do we lose to? Aces, kings, queens, jacks, 10x, nines, eights, sevens, sixes, and there are a lot of 10x combinations she could have played this way. Ace-10, king-10, jack-10, 10-9. I know this is a pretty small bet, and if we call and are wrong, it only represents a small portion of our stack. But sometimes, a small loss for a huge mental win is worth it, especially after a big suckout, which we feel we've just fallen victim to. If she has quads, she's going to show them. So either way, we get to see the end result. We fold. She flashes the 10 of clubs and rakes in the pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes, even if the math adds up to a call, when you know you're beat, you're beat. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, well, you know, we talked at the top of the show about how we think O'Malley's become a pretty good player, right? So here's the thing. You know, long-term winning players, I think, will learn to make those types of decisions when the money involved is slight, and that's what makes them long-term winning players rather than the rest of us. But, you know, most of us are recreational players, right?
Right.
And so I still have no problem making this call. To me, it's a lot like a limit game here where, you know, we only have to be right once in 10 of these situations to pay for the other 9 that were wrong. And so, I'm not going to feel bad about Colin, but I'm obviously impressed that O'Malley had the stones to be able to throw that away.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, results aside, I still make this call. Given the info that we had, given the situation and the amount of money it was, I wanted to see what this person had. You know, I mean, I knew I was going to find out because it's O'Malley's move, but at the table, I think I'd probably make that call too, and just to see it and say, all right, you know what, I've learned from this and I'll move on. But you're right. As a recreational player, I think that I would make that call. And, you know, I know you try to save money here and there, but the information was kind of important to see how they played flopping 3-10s or whatever. So,
I mean, ultimately, what is $25? I mean, that makes a big deal if you're a 1-2 player in terms of if you're tracking your play and, you know, I mean, that wipes out a couple hours of profit right there. So it's not that small of a bet, but, you know, let's give kudos to our opponent, too, for setting a good price that lured at least two of us in.
Yeah.
If not O'Malley. I mean, you know, if she bets 50 there, easy fold to me.
Yeah, maybe even the pot, if she bets 40 or whatever, I may even fold. But for 25, I just, you know, it could be one of those things they're stealing or they think their ace is good or something. You know, I don't know. So,
you know, and sometimes people are going to purposely bet a smaller amount, but big enough that it makes you think. Because you're playing that second level game, we're like, you know what? He's trying to get me to call. I'm going to show you.
Right.
I'm not going to call and fold and win with a lesser hand. So, I mean, on balance, I think you end up making more money on that. But, you know, as those lower level games, certainly at the bigger ones, it's probably a bigger deal. But.
Yep, very good.
All right, well, as we mentioned, I've began my 2013 crisscrossing of the country. I just got back from a quick trip to Biloxi, New Orleans, a Florida panhandle, and before that, a very short trip all the way up to Maine. Gosh, it's cold in Maine, Chris.
It is cold.
When we got there, it was like 4 degrees.
Jeez.
No, 5 degrees when we got off the plane, and we're driving to the hotel, and then you have one of those big bank buildings, you know, that's the time of the day and the temperature. 4. The next morning I woke up, I turned my phone on, 1. And here's the thing. I think if your city can't heat itself to the point where you have an S at the end of degree in your temperature, you have to bring in the National Guard.
Bring in some flamethrowers.
For everyone. Absolutely. Yeah, that's just ridiculous. But no, I had some fun. Got some news updates for folks from the Gulf Coast. Played a couple tournaments we'll talk about. And then I had some funny stories up in Maine. So, Let me jump into the news thing, and then I know you're going to have...
We'll see.
All right, in Biloxi, first of all, the IP Biloxi there is going to host a WPT regional event in March and their usual World Series circuit event in September. It's actually getting pushed back from August, where it was last year. And the room has moved up to the second floor now, if you haven't been there. They only lost one table, so I think they're down to 13. But very nice room up on the second floor. You know, it's getting one of these debates. I was talking to the poker room manager, and there are two kinds of players, right? There are other players that want to be able to play poker, like, in a library setting.
Yeah.
With that room, like, completely closed off from the rest of the casino, in a dark basement, no sound anywhere. And then you have the players that like it open up, where you hear the ambient sounds of a casino. So this one is open, and you hear the ambient sounds. So if you're a player that likes that, you're going to love it. If you're a player that doesn't, then you're probably not going to. But it's a nice little room up there. And the best thing is it's now right next to the Studio B Event Center. So, you know, they have those big tournaments every year. Now they don't have to separate their tournament play and cash game play.
Okay.
And I think that's a pretty big deal because, you know, it's tough when you bust out a tournament and there's no cash games going there because you got to walk all the way down the stairs or to the other side of the casino to find it, and then you have to walk back up. Sometimes they have cash games in both places. So I think any property that can actually put those two things together, I think, are going to do pretty well.
Remember the old room was next to the escalator and that person fell down? Remember that?
Well, it's been like six or seven places. I don't remember the person falling. Okay. Down,
I remember when we went there together. You had just gotten the chairs or something, and we were there, and somebody had fallen off the escalator like the day that we were there, and it was pretty brutal. And we were like, "Oh my god, what do we do?" You know. And then somebody was there and helped them from staff. But I remember it used to be right next to the room.
Last time I was there, it was on the bottom floor. And it was in a glassed off area. Yeah. Which actually kind of weird. I kind of felt like I was in an aquarium in that room.
Aquarium.
A little different than other places, but...
I am of that camp, though. I do like the quiet room.
Yeah, I think I generally do, too. Although, there's some rooms I've been in where it's kind of nice to... What you want is kind of like the din of the slot machines.
Yeah.
But not the Wheel of Fortune!
Yeah.
Shouting in your head every 5 minutes.
Right.
A little balance, as usual. That's tough to do, though, because... There's not a lot of quiet slot machines.
No.
And then I got a little hard hat tour. Actually, not a hard hat at all. I didn't get a hard hat at all, but I'm going to pretend like it was a hard hat tour. Okay. At the Isle Casino, which the Golden Nugget bought last year, and they own it now, but then they're continuing to operate it as an Isle Casino until they are ready to rebrand it as a Golden Nugget, which should happen. As early as the summer, if not as late as Memorial Day. But they're moving almost all the gaming down at the first floor, making that a little more happening area. The rooms are definitely much nicer now. And eventually, the last stage of the renovation will be to move the poker room just a touch from where it is now by the buffet. And they're going to add an event center and boardrooms. So if folks have played in their grand poker series out in Vegas, you kind of know we're talking about that big grand center. Yep. They're gonna have one of those there, and again, just like the IP, the poker room's gonna be right next to that. So, you know, if they decide to do one of those grand series tournaments there, the poker room, the actual room, will be right next to the actual tournament area. Becoming a new trend, I think.
Yeah, it's a smart trend.
And then I didn't make it all the way over to Cypress Bayou, a fun little casino over in Sheraton in Louisiana, but the poker room manager did drive over and we chatted in New Orleans. And he told me they have a new 100-room hotel on site now, and I went to the website. It looks really nice. And they're looking to expand their tournament business, so hopefully even maybe have Ante up in there. But I like that little place.
Yeah. No, I always love that room with that dark leather and dark wood and everything. I always loved that room we visited the last time, so...
Yeah, and they take such good care of players there. I mean, I was reminded when I was talking to them that they don't rake their tournaments. They obviously, when they do a bigger one, they're obviously going to have to rake it at that point. But just a lot of player-friendly stuff there. So,
yeah.
Looking forward to getting back there. in between meetings, I did play two events in the Million Dollar Heater at the Beau Rivage. They always do such great tournaments there. And Johnny Groom's poker manager and Eric Comer, the tournament director. And and they have that big ballroom upstairs too, so it was a lot of fun there. And apparently they had massive crowds on the weekend. I think 900 people, I think, for event 3, something like that.
Jeez.
And then somebody else was telling me that Choctaw, which is not all that close, but in the same geographic area, did 600 players for a similar tournament on the same day. So that's 1,500 people playing in three 350 buy-in tournaments on the same day, in the same region. So I think that might be the new price point. And then a big guarantee on them as well. That which always helps. But then Monday came, everybody left town. And, you know, it seems like it's just another victim of our nation's ever-expanding poker tournament schedule, which obviously we're to blame for now since we're starting the India Poker Tour as well.
Yeah.
but just a lot of competition. And, you know, I think the big thing, too, people are talking about, I mean, a lot of these series now, if you look at the circuits, they're all, like, what, 11 days now? It's tough to put on these three-week series anymore. Outside of maybe like LA, you know, or the Commerce and the Bicycle and get away with it because they have so many people that live there. But in areas where you need people to drive in, it's just tough to get people to drive in and stay for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Or to pick a week in the middle and stick there and not, you know, then you have to decide which one you want to come in for. So you don't get them for all 3 weeks. But that being said, the weekends are really big. They had a lot of huge cash games. I think they had like a 25, 50 big O going or something like that. I imagine on the rest of the weekends it's going to be as busy as well. But the first time I played Event 9, which was Limit Hold'em. And I think I texted you right after I registered. It was like 2 hours before the start. You know, I just got to town. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go register, make sure I don't get shut out. And then the little tournament lady at the cage was so excited to see me. She's like, you are our first one to register, honey.
When you sent me that text, I said, oh, great, Scott's going to take down another shorthanded title. Hey, I won a 9-player sit and go. I got 2 titles now. Yay.
I was like, what? I'm the first one? I'm like, the tournament is today, right? And they're like, yeah, that's right, honey. I'm like, oh, man. So at the end of the day, you know, they do some late registration for an hour, hour and a half, I think. We ended up with a strikingly large field of 27 entrants.
3 tables.
And I was thinking the exact same thing that you were. I'm like, all right. We pad my end and mom page with another week performance from Scott Long. But you know, they had these really awesome trophies. I didn't know they were giving out trophies for every single event, but it was like it was actually a globe that spun.
Oh yeah,
it was really neat. So at that point, I'm like, you know what? I want to win this more than the just rubbing in Chris Cassez's face. I want that trophy.
Yeah,
and I got to beat 26 people. And I got close, made it to the final table. Got to the final table, played absolutely brutal. Absolutely brutal. I had a hand where, you know, because again, these limit terms we talk about, at some point it gets to the point where you have to make, you're not making poker decisions, you're making chip management decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, the blinds are just so high and the average chip stacks that, you know, if you open a pot, you're almost committing yourself to that pot. And, or if you miss it, then boom, you're really short stacked. So I was under the gun with pocket sixes, and I'm like, you know what? If I need to come in, I'm going to raise, but I can't raise because I'm probably going to get called. What do you do on a flop then? You're going to make a C bet, and someone's going to get a piece of it. Just not going to do it. And I don't want to limp either, so you know what? I'll just fold. That's what I did. Flop came 7 deuce-deuce, I think.
Mm.
Single bet. I certainly would have called that. Turn a 6.
Oh.
And the guy ended up winning with pocket aces, and he got all in too. So I'm sure I would have got him all in too, and I had more chips than him at that point. So I would have knocked a player out. Had a huge chip stack, but I was a little wimp. And then I was doing stuff like, and after that, I'm like, ah. So then I was making some ill-time raises with ace rags, you know, like ace deuce. Hey, table's tightening up a little bit. Let me steal some blinds. And every time I raise, no one folds.
Jeez.
And then when you do at that point, you don't hit anything on the flop. It's tough. So, you know, but I admit I played pretty terribly. Finished 9th out of the money. They only paid, actually paid top 5, which is kind of impressive for 27 entrants, I think.
Yeah.
But a couple things about that I thought were interesting. One, we got to the final table, which was 10-handed, and the chip leader was first person eliminated.
Wow.
You know how hard that is to do in a limit tournament?
Wow.
I think he played every single hand at the final table. While he was there. And got eliminated, and he walked away, and I'm like, did that just happen? And he was a big chip leader, too.
Wow. In limit.
That's, yeah, I mean, if you would have put some odds on that being... if you actually tried to make that happen, I don't think you could.
Weren't you chip leader for a little bit, too, in this tournament, or no?
Yeah, when we were down to two tables. You know, we started with three, but...
Right, but still.
Yeah, two tables, I had a pretty nice hand where I called two short stacks all the way down with pocket eights, even though there were, like, eight over cards on the board. And the pocket eights held up, and then you get thought, oh my gosh, as people get up and leave. I'm like, sorry, first time playing. Stack of chips. But yeah, that was the other funny thing, too, is we were down 12-handed and the chop talk started.
Ooh.
I forgot to put that in the notes here. But yeah, isn't that kind of weird?
It is weird.
And then the thought process from the person that was starting to get going is, you know what, hey, man, we've been playing forever. It's been like 6 hours. I mean, certainly not forever.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I don't want to play all this way to the end and not get anything out of it. So if we chop now, and they're talking about leaving a couple, you know, the initial deal was everybody gets their money back, the $240 that we paid to get in. And that would leave like $1,000 or $2,000 on top to play for. And, you know, I'm sitting there, I kept quiet because I'm, you know, I don't like the chop as it is, but I'm like, What good does it do to get my money back here and play for maybe another $500?
Yeah.
And that trophy just doesn't seem like... We're going to chop 12-handed in a tournament that had 27 entrants.
I know.
Literally just past the halfway mark of the tournament.
Yay, you've lasted half the field. Here's your money back.
But I guess that's the thought process, is the guy was saying, you know, hey, I don't want to play all this time and not get anything out of it. You know, fifth place was like... 260 or something, so you barely got your money back at that point. But first place was 2,300, right. Pretty low. And that was what I was thinking. I'm like, you know what? I'd rather play all the way to the end and try to win $2,300 than take my $240. But and then you got somebody like me that just saying, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, we've only been playing 6 hours. Let's play this thing out.
Well, here's the thing. You don't know this, but what? I get the results all the time from everyone, right? And I look at them all the time. There are things where the guy who wins the tournament gets paid $3,000, and the guy who loses and comes in fifth has $9,000.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how did that happen? Well, they did a, you know, chip equity chop, and he got most of the money. Then they played it out, and the guy who shouldn't have won. So here's what you should have said. Okay, I'll chop now, but you give me the trophy and declare me the winner at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, somebody actually said that, and of course, the one yappy kid that was trying to get the chop, he wanted was the trophy, too. So then he had two people that wanted the trophy, and no one had a bandsaw. You know.
Bandsaw. Give me the globe half. I want the globe half. You got the stump.
But really, I don't know what the competition level is that you need. You feel the need to have to chop halfway through any tournament. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
Another funny thing, too, is, you know, I sat down at the table before the tournament started, and the dealer was like, yep, limit tournament. Can't wait till the first person sits down that says, oh my gosh, this is limit? I thought I registered for no limit. And we all chuckled and stuff. First guy sits down, first hand of the tournament, raises to 600. Oh, that's a little bit too much, sir. What do you mean? Why are you telling me how much I can bet? It's a limit tournament. Oh my gosh, you're kidding me!
Oh, jeez.
Oh my gosh, a limit tournament? I would never have entered this if I knew it was a limit tournament.
Oh my god.
So I thought that was going to be the only guy, right? So then I move, our table eliminates. I'm sitting next to another guy who was pretty aggressive, and his friend buddy comes over and he's like, dude, what are you doing playing a limit tournament? He's like, I know, I didn't know it was a limit tournament. Now I'm stuck in it for the rest of the night. I really don't understand how this happens.
Jeez.
And I guess what I try to do is I'm like, you know, when I register, I'm like, you know, I'm not registering for tonight's tournament or event six. I'm like, I'm registering for the limit hold'em. And that way they can correct me if for some reason I misread something.
Yeah.
But apparently these people don't. So, but there's nothing better than seeing no limit hold'em players trapped in a limit tournament for 6 hours.
That's all they do is whine, right?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
All right, and then the final thing about this is, you know, this particular room lets their tournament dealers play when they're off duty. And so we had a player at my first table, one of the chattiest people I've ever seen. And so at some point early on, she's like, hey, does anybody want to buy tournament chips? Now, you know, this particular room, you can't buy in for cash. You have to go to the cage, you buy a tournament chip for $100 or $200. And then you go to the other cage and buy your seat, right?
Okay.
And they do a bunch of satellites with the giveaway tournament chips. So she wanted to sell tournament chips. And so no one really answered her, right? But then there was four guys that weren't in the tournament that were just sitting there talking at the table. And she asked them, and they're like, and one of the kids was like, well, how much are you offering? And she's like, face value, of course. And he's like, well, I'm not going to buy tournament chips for me from face value. And she's like, fine, be that way. And then she went on this long rage about how no one ever pays less than face value for tournament chips. This is just something that happens. It's part of the etiquette of being at a tournament to help people out, because she's a tournament dealer and she can't sell chips when she's in her uniform. She can only sell them when she's not. And this is just what people do to help each other out of the tournaments.
Huh.
Have you ever heard this?
No, I've never heard of that. I'm learning a lot of new things this week about etiquette. I'll tell you about that later. But yeah, no, I didn't know that.
And then she wouldn't shut up about it. And we're like, you know, so here's the thing is, all right, that might be your etiquette, but this is a business transaction, right?
Right.
You're offering something at a price. If somebody doesn't want it, deal's done. Don't make them feel like they're bad because they won't buy a tournament chip from you at face value when they can walk six steps and get it from a legitimate source.
Yeah.
And buy it. I just, you know, it seemed ridiculous to me.
All she's doing is saving you the six steps.
Yeah, exactly. But we're supposed to help her out because she's in the situation where she has tournament chips.
That's right.
And that's what people do there. So now you're a bad person because you don't want to help me out. Forget that.
Forget it.
It's a poker table. We're all in it for ourselves, right?
That's right.
And then the other thing too is, you know, she just chatted the entire time, and I don't like to bring headphones to the table because I like to talk to people, you know, particularly when I'm wearing Annie Up stuff and talking about Annie Up, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be closed off. But the guy next to her had headphones on, and I was never more envious of headphones ever. And so at the break, we came back, and that guy, he was like, oh, man, this woman is driving me insane. She won't shut up. I had to put my headphones on. I'm like, I know. And she's like, and then she's showing me pictures of her baby, and she was doing that. And I'm like, hey, look at the picture that my mom just sent me. All right, here's the thing. No one sits at a poker table going, gosh, I hope I get to see pictures of cute babies today. You know, at least on Facebook, if you become my Facebook friend, you're tacitly giving me permission to show you pictures of my most amazing cats, and they really are the most amazing cats in the world, right? But I would never whip out my phone at the table going, oh, guys, look what Draper did today. He's so cute. When has that become the norm now, or allowed?
Hey, lady, you want to see my turtle?
It's insane, isn't it?
Well, I think it's part of her game, Scott. I think she's putting you on tilt. I think she's trying to put people on tilt by being obnoxious at the table with all these stupid things, maybe. Maybe that's the goal.
But gosh.
Yeah.
Maybe the next TDA needs to, take up a rule. No baby photos.
No photos at all.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so then I played the following day, I played the Event 11, the Omaha 8. This time, I'm like, I didn't feel like a rush to sign up.
Right.
Got there 40 minutes before the start, and I was the 18th person to enter.
Hmm.
Sat down at the tournament 40 minutes later, 70 people had entered.
Jeez.
And we ended up with 90 by the end of late registration. So apparently a gaggle of off-duty tournament dealers decided to come in and play the Omaha event, which normally makes for a fun event because they're all crazy.
Yeah.
But I only got one at my table, so it wasn't all that exciting to me. But went out in the high 40s, nothing remarkable in the tournament at that one. But it is fun to see a bunch of dealers playing Omaha. And because then you also had dealers correcting the dealers that are sitting down that are dealing it. All right, so we got one high, one low. No. You got to chop this pot, and that goes there, that goes there. All right, whatever. Just tell me what to do.
I like playing with dealers at cash games because they just throw money all around. It's hilarious how much they tip the dealers. Oh, I'm in the business. I know what you're going through. Here's $5, you know. And they're just they're a lot of fun to be around. I don't really recall too many tournaments around with dealers. But cash games are a lot of fun when you're playing with dealers like that.
Yeah, and well, the other thing too is that they're talking about. I mean, you learn a lot about the biz.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so what tournament you're gonna go to next? Well, I'm gonna go to this one. I would never go back to that one. Well, why not? Well, I'll tell you after the break. Okay, all right. Well,
Was it personal or no? I'll tell you later. Okay, all right. Well, you know, hey, somebody stole my seat cushion today, and I had to go to Walmart and buy another one.
It's actually very entertaining.
I'm sure it is. Got you off your game. You went out in mid-40s.
All right. Well, before I went to the Gulf Coast, as I mentioned, I went up to Maine for a quick trip. When I was in college, I had a couple roommates from Maine, right?
Yeah.
And they don't live there anymore, though. So, and I've always wanted to go to Maine. And I just never thought that I would go when the Atlantic Ocean was frozen over. So I'm flying up there with every piece of warm clothing I own. And I'm like, who do I know up there now? Because all my college roommates don't live there. And I'm like, oh, Christy from Maine.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she writes in the show often. And I'm like, I have no idea where she lives in Maine. I actually had no idea how big Maine is. Turns out it's a big freaking state.
It's massive, yeah.
So I shot her an email before, hey, I'm flying up to Portland today. I don't know where you live, but do you have any restaurant bar suggestions for me? And she's like, oh my gosh, I live 30 minutes from Portland. I'll be happy to come out and maybe we can play some cards. And I'm like, all right. So we met and had a couple drinks. And then she's like, all right, well, there's this new this club here in Portland I want to try. I'm like, we could actually play poker in the middle of Portland? There's no casinos or anything, right? So apparently she goes to one close to her house that has a membership fee, which I guess is how you get around it. And you pay $20 a month, you get in, and you can play it, right?
Oh, yeah.
But this was actually in Portland. She's like, I've never played there. They keep inviting me to come, but do you want to go play some cards? And I'm like, all right, fine. So we get in our car, right, and we drive, and we're following in the little directions. And we get there, and so much of the first 5 minutes there was reminiscent of this movie. I don't know if you've seen it, called Rounders.
I knew you were going to say that.
So here's the thing. We pull up. It's an industrial park, right?
Yeah.
Nothing else going on. There's only one little tiny light above one door, which apparently is where this club is, right? So we walk up, and and it's like, you know, -27 degrees at this point, right? So they have these huge stalactite things hanging from the buildings. And I'm looking up, I'm like, ah, you know, in Florida, it's like 170 with humidity in the summer, but the worst that can fall off a building is some worker guy's sweat, so you just stink, right? This thing could fall off and impale me. I could die.
And I'm impressed that you got that right. You called it a stalactite.
Rather than a stalagmite, yeah.
Yeah, I'm impressed with that. Very good.
A little known fact, I went out of the eighth grade spelling bee by misspelling stalactite.
See what you learn on Annie Up?
So we pull up and we walk up and I'm freezing. I'm looking at these killer stalactites. And so we have to push the little doorbell, right? And they have a little camera that's right above the door looking down on us, I guess checking to make sure we're not the 5-0 or, you know, Guido or the ex-wife or whoever.
Did you do Mike McDermott and wave to the camera?
She did.
She did, yeah.
Of course, now she's Christy. Hey, I'm Christy. And I'm like hanging out. I'm like, what am I getting into, you know? So they come to the door and they're like, yes, who are you? You're like, hey, I'm Christy, Mike or Joe or whoever invited me, send me the directions. Oh, okay, come on down. So we go down the stairs and it is a regular little basement underground poker club.
Cool.
Never played in one before.
Cool.
It was really neat. You know, they had a little kitchen area with, like, all candy and microwave popcorn and a cooler with soda and beer and Red Bull. And everything was free except for the Red Bull. You're on an honor system for $3. So I don't know if those people just, like, suck down Red Bull like it's going out of style there or what. But and a little tin of homemade lasagna out. Then they had four poker tables. Normal-looking poker tables, not those little, you know, folding jobbies you get from Walmart, but real poker tables with little cameras and stuff, everything, and TVs. And they're at the final table of a tournament, and then they had a couple 1-1 cash games going, and we sat down and played for a little bit.
Cool.
And it was really neat, actually. And they have real dealers, right? So it's not self-deal. Real dealers and who work for tips, which, you know, all dealers work for tips, so I don't know whether they don't, but the guy made a mention of that because they don't get a regular salary or anything, they're just working for tips, but whatever. They turned out to be really good dealers, I thought, for this underground club. And but it's, they're real dealers, but it's a self-shuffle room.
So you shuffle and give it to the dealer to deal?
what happens is they use two decks, right?
Yeah.
Love this place. And after the hand, they give the deck that was just used to the new dealer button dealer, right?
Right.
And while that next hand's going in progress, you're shuffling for them. And then you get done, you put the deck on the dealer button, which, by the way, is this huge dealer button. It looks like a hubcap off of a 57 Chevy. There's a dealer on it. And you put the cards on there, and then when the hand's done, she moves the dealer button, picks up the cards, and deals.
Huh.
So you get a lot more hands, I guess, that way.
Yeah.
But you also have eight people that you don't know from Adam, you know.
Shuffling
the cards like Worm, you know. So yeah. They do cut. The dealer does cut, so it does help a little bit, I guess.
Well, don't forget, California Split back then, they used a deal, too. Remember, they dealt their own, so, you know, they love that movie, so... It did happen in the past. It just happened to be such a big industry now that you could pay the dealers. But back then, you used to deal for yourself then, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So. But like I said, the dealers were really good. They called the action. They pointed out. I mean, these weren't your, you know, hey, Joey, my brother, why don't you come and deal for us tonight? You know?
Right, right. They were real dealers.
They seemed really good. And they did this little thing, you know, when they when somebody tipped them a $5 chip, they would go, Redbird, woo-woo, and chat, and all the dealers would go, woo-woo. It was kind of fun. and then, but you know, they're as good a dealer as they are. It's also kind of fun being an underground club because they do some stuff you don't see in a normal poker room. So, about the third hand in, the last guy folded and he's like, hey, can I see a turn and rip? She's like, sure. Grab the deck and rabbit hunts, at the whole thing. And the guy's like, oh, grumbles and stands away from the table. And I'm like, wow, I haven't seen that happen ever. But they had an actual licensed massage therapist there that was there doing massages just like in a real room. It was really kind of cool.
One thing, when you said you don't know why he brought that up about the tips, but I'm pretty sure dealers in real casinos get sort of like a scale pay, though.
Yeah, they get some kind of hourly rate.
They get some hourly rate, so that's what he's probably saying. They don't get that probably at this place. They just get tips.
I assume that's why he meant. But
yeah, that must be it.
But, you know, but then again, I started thinking, you know, you get, most people are tipping between 1 and 3 like a normal place, and then, of course, you know, you get 3 or 4 Redbirds a month, or an hour. That's a good little payday there.
Sure it is. I mean, it's like, you know, when they talk about these poker rooms that are expanding and a lot of the people in my family are looking for jobs or something, and I'm like, you might want to be a dealer. Think about it. You deal 30 hands an hour. You get, even if you got $1 from each one, it's $30 an hour.
An hour, yeah.
You know?
Normal pay.
Yeah. So if you're getting 2 and 3 and 5, and I mean, that's just crazy. That's great pay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Plus the, if you're working for a real place, plus the $2 an hour, whatever it is that they pay you too. So, I mean, being a dealer, if you can do it, it's smart.
Yeah, it'd be a good one. You can get a lot of hands out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we both didn't do very well, so we ended up leaving. She busted. I actually saved $27 out of my $100 buy-in. And so we get in her car, she drives me back to the hotel, and she's like, you know, Scott, you were really quiet at the table. I'm really surprised. And I'm like, well, you know, first of all, I'm not one of these bombastic Dan, the insurance salesman guys that sits down at the table and goes, hey, you need term life?
Yeah.
I don't like to do that, right?
Yeah.
And normally I'm wearing Annie Up clothing, so if people want to talk about Annie Up, they'll bring it up, and then I'll be happy to talk to them about it. I didn't have anything on that night, which was good. And then I'm like, the other thing is, like, you know what? I didn't really know the legality of where I'm playing right now, you know?
Yeah.
The last thing I want to say is, hey, yeah, I own a poker magazine, and have, like, you know, people, like, throw me out and beat me up like the municipal game and rounder, you know? So I try to keep it a little quiet. I mean, people ask where I was from. I am from Florida. What are you doing up here? I'm up on business, and I kept it kind of quiet. But she thought I was going to be really chatty. Of course, we were not sitting next to each other. If I was sitting next to her, I would have met Chatty Cathy all night with her. But not with the players. But it was a fun group. You had a little bit of everybody there. You had a nice older guy that's there every night. You had a couple young kids, and I don't know, fun little place. I'd go back.
That's cool. I'm a little envious now. I've never played an underground club. I mean, I suppose home games are kind of underground, but they're not clubs. You know what I mean? So
I like
that's,
that. Yeah.
That's kind of cool. I'm envious. Maybe I have to make the trek up to the 1 degree state.
You can come back in the summer with me when I go back.
Well, it's good to have you back for all of, 28 hours before you have to ship out again, so always funny stuff when you come back.
I appreciate it.
This is Joe Seabock, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, we got a situation this week, I believe.
Oh, it's a situation.
Yeah, I think. All right. My notes. So, I mean, the email from Austin Bluffs is Hand of the Week, but I believe it ends up being a situation.
That's his name, or is that where he lives?
That's his nickname. I can see. No, he didn't put his real. Obviously, his real name's on the email, but he didn't put it on the bottom of the email. So
I'm Austin Bluffs from Austin Bluffs, and I often bluff.
You know, one thing, a funny thing, the other thing about playing the Gulf Coast LA is the players at the table have stories like you've never believed.
Yeah.
Well, they're just chuckling, having a good time. So I heard one of the funniest lines I've heard in a while, and I'm sure it's been around for 40 years, but I heard it for the first time this week. He's like, if you catch me bluffing, you can have the pot. You gotta think about it a little bit, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, of course. If you catch him bluffing, you did win the pot. Although, you know what? You should catch him bluffing with an inferior hand. You know, your bluff is worse than his, and then you have to push you the pot.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so there is a little wiggle room there. A little angle shooting you can do.
That's pretty funny.
All right, well, Austin Bluffs was playing 1-2 Nullimit Hold'em at the Lucky Eagle Casino in Eagle Pass, Texas. The only legal card room in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Over there on near El Paso, I think, right?
Isn't that near a border? It's like near the border.
Yeah, it's right near New Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Oklahoma, I guess? I don't know.
I know it's near a border, though, I think.
Geographically challenged. I thought Maine was like the size of Delaware, but wrong.
Maine's massive.
Big. All right, so Austin says, in a 16-hour session, I had a few hands I've been reflecting on, and here's the one that he would like to chat about.
One 16-hour session?
I know, isn't that crazy?
Wow. Hats off, buddy. Hats off.
A dinner break at some point.
God.
He said he had worked his stack up to the 600, 700-hour range.
Sure.
Where I've been hovering for a while, where this hand came up. I was in the cutoff position. That's one past the anti-penultimate.
That was close. You almost got it.
Almost got there. I'll get there eventually. I was in the cutoff position with 8 of diamonds, 9 of diamonds, and limped in behind 2 limpers. Let's see if I get down to the situation. Yep. All right. So we limped in. I limped in behind 2 limpers, right?
Mm-hmm.
The blinds also limped, and we go to a flop of 6 of diamonds, 7 of diamonds, X. I wonder if the card actually had a big X.
I was going to say, if they dealt an X card out, then it's a misdeal. So basically, the X didn't mean anything, because all we care about is that we have an open-ended straight flush draw, and we have the top end of it, so...
Right. Unless X are wild cards in that room. That would be awesome.
Because then you got your straight flush, and you can't lose.
Yeah, absolutely.
At that point.
All right, so he says, I flopped an open-ended straight flush draw. There's a bad beat jackpot of $106,000 in this room. So my plan for the hand was to try to keep the pot small and see if I could prove to a straight a baby flush or, of course, a straight flush and allow the remote possibility of someone improving to a bad beat eligible hand. All right, so we talked about this a little bit before, right? You don't like to play this way, right?
No, I don't like to play for the bad beat. I like to play optimally. Right?
Is sometimes optimally playing for $106,000?
Well, I like to play the hand optimally, not the bad beat.
Okay.
I'm not playing for $106,000. I mean, if it happens, it happens. But how many times? It's clearly $106,000 because it's so hard for it to actually happen and come in our favor that I would rather do that than give away my hand and have someone make a different hand that beats me, you know, whatever. I just want to play the hand optimally.
Gotcha. All right, well, with $9 in the pot, it's checked around to the hijack, one position before me, and run position after the what?
The anti-penultimate.
Guys, you're so good. So invasive. Command of the language. So hijack bets $5. And our hero says, this is good for me, sweetening the pot a little, allowing me to continue to draw to a monster. I call, and the small blind folds. And the big blind raises to $75, leaving about $125 behind. All remaining players fold to me. So our situation is now to call $70 to win about $90 on a draw. Not much better than even money.
Well, I really can't answer this question until I know the person who raised $75 what they have. And I don't know if you have that info, do you?
How much?
How much did you say it was?
It says leaving them 125 behind.
Okay, 125 behind. Yeah, and I have 700 in front of me with two cards to come. Yeah, here's the deal. Now the whole bad beat thing is out the window anyway. Because either you're going to call or put this guy all in or whatever, and it's not going to matter. You're going to see all the cards, and maybe you'll have a set and turn quads, and then you make your straight flush, and you'll make your bad beat story. But the real question is whether or not I want to risk 75 to win 90, or whatever it is, 70 to win 90. Yeah,
with the added possibility that as remote as it is, that you could hit the bad beat.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I'm going away here, because the guy is raising that much for a reason, and the reason isn't that he has the same hand as me, or that we have, you know, if we do have the same hand, then I have the redraw to diamonds, and I have the straight flush for a possible bad beat in case this guy has a set or something. But I just feel like my hand is so strong here. The only thing I'm afraid of is, and I'm not really afraid of much here, other than maybe a set, because even if they have bigger diamonds, we still have outs. We have the straight outs, and we have mm-hmm. the straight flush diamonds on our side. So I don't know. I mean, it's
might
a lot
have
of
pair
money.
Outs too. That's the other kind of interesting thing.
What's that? Eight or
even
nine?
Even though yeah. we only have what was her hand again?
Eight, nine diamonds.
8, 9. You know, if they're on a flush draw, it might be like ace king or something. Right.
So we have 8 and 9 as a hand now.
So
too.
The 8 9 could help us too. Obviously, we don't know. I don't know what this obviously the X card is, but yeah. I mean, there's some other. This is one of those situations that is really hard to really
like
assess
14
or pull
outs. If they have like ace king of diamonds, we have like 14 outs, which they wouldn't have that hand because it wasn't really a pre-raise flop kind of thing.
The good thing about it is that you have so many outs that even if some that are counterfeited, you've got other outs that.
Yeah,
counterfeited by that opens up other outs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm almost inclined to just shove and get it over with, but I don't think I would have done that. I think I might call a 70. And then, you know, at that point, whatever the turn is, make my decision then. But, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to just call there, because you better hope you hit your hand and hope it's good. But he can't hurt us too much. You know, we have 700 in front of us, and even if we got the guy all in, it's 200. We're still back down to 500. You know, we've worked hard, but we've built it up from in a 1-2 game. You know, we're definitely up. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's such a juicy hand. I don't know if in a tournament, I don't even think twice about it. In cash, I know the chips are your tools, and you know, so think about it like that. But I mean, 70 is a pretty big raise. But he's raised like that because he probably has. You know, he may think we're weak, and he's got a straight draw, or he thinks that you know, he's got a set of sixes or something like that, and he's protecting his hand because of the caller and the mini bet there. So I think we have enough outs to win this hand, and I think that I would probably call and hope I hit on the turn and then not worry about his 125 left. But even if I'm wrong and I have to get it all in with him, I'm still off a bunch on the night, it looks like, if I bought in for like 200 or so.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to for me, I think, is that, you know, you don't want to play sloppy poker ever, but here's kind of the thing is when you, I don't know what you bought in for, let's say 200, so he's obviously made three times that,
yeah.
more than that
more
right
than
now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And my line of thinking is you've built that up so you can take some of these chances that you can't afford to take when you just buy in or when you're short stacked.
Right.
You know, this is not $70 is $70, whether you have $70 in your stack or 7,000 in your stack. But the fact that you have some weapons to play with here where if you lose that $70, you're still up and you have a shot at winning, of rolling that money over into more, I guess is the way I'm thinking, right?
Even $106,000.
Exactly. No, I mean, the pot's not great. I mean, if we get the whole thing out of him, we're making 200 off him plus the limpers. But, you know, but that's yet another 100-some bucks that we can add to our kitty here if we hit it, right? And if we're wrong, then we're still up. So I'm more inclined to make these kind of calls when I've had a good session rather than feeling like I need to bank that profit.
Do you think shoving's a bad move here? Sort of like maybe now you're springing a trap on somebody who thought they were springing a trap and trying to make them fold their hand because they don't really have as strong a hand. I mean, if they had a set of sevens, then they couldn't fold. But if they had a set of sixes or whatever that X is, you know, I mean, they might consider themselves being behind or maybe they have a draw too and they don't want to have to put it in 125. I guess they couldn't fold their 125 after that.
But, I don't know. I think there's a lot of players that could probably fold this with 125 behind.
So. I wonder if a shove's a good play here. And if you're wrong, you got your outs anyway.
Exactly. I mean, you've got a lot of outs regardless of what he has, our opponent has. And there's a chance. I mean, I guess it depends on whether you want him to fold and win the pot here, which I think right now we have 9 high.
Yeah.
So I would be inclined to want to win this pot right now. It's pretty big now. We got $75 out of him. I mean, with limpers, $80-$90. With 9 high, that's a good pot, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's about 90.
And we know we're probably going to get it all in anyhow because it's going to be tough for us to fold anything here with all the outs that we still have. You know, another interesting, and Austin Plus has a bunch of things that he thought about, so we'll run through those real quick. The other thing, too, is back to the bad beat discussion. I would want to know what the rules for the bad beat are in this room.
Yeah.
Because generally, it's, really, if the guy has a set here, it's going to have to be quads.
Yeah.
So that means we have to get our straight flush, and he has to get quads.
And his other card has to play, no?
Because, right, exactly. If he had a set, he'd have to have a set right now. So, I mean, that's true. Yeah, it depends on what the fifth card would be. Yeah.
Right.
But the other thing, too, is, I mean, sometimes it's, you know, you can beat aces full, but it has to be a high aces full.
Right.
And right now, we have a 6 and a 7 on the board. We don't know what the X is, but certainly probably not big. The chance that we could get our straight flush, he could get his full house, and it doesn't qualify.
Right.
Because of the small cards. If we had bigger cards on the board, then maybe there's a better chance that we could beat it. So
he could have 3-4 of diamonds, and the 5 of diamonds comes when they both get straight flush.
Ah, there you go. Very nice.
But that's very difficult. But it's possible. But then if that's the case, then you're really way ahead, and you really want to get all your money, because his only outs are 3 and 4.
Exactly, yeah. All right, so here's kind of what his thought process was. He said, I ruled out a bluff since the villain had not been very active at this point, and the bet amount was extremely large, $75 into a $19 pot.
Yeah, yep, yeah.
Absolutely. I assumed that regardless of the outcome of the turn card, the villain would likely shove on the turn. I believe I needed to decide to commit to the pot now for 2 cards, turn and river, or fold. In hindsight, I wonder if I could have just called here, assuming he might reassess and just check the turn, since I made the flop call with position against him. I think that's what we were talking about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to shove here if he's got a weaker hand and we can get him to fold and win with 9 high. But other than that, I mean, we're still committing ourselves. We're not saying we're going to fold, so... he says, I had only invested $7 in the pot at the time, so a fold would let me off cheap and protect the stack that I had been building. He said, this had some psychological influence on me as I had an unusual loss of $700 in my last session there a few weeks ago. I committed to playing solid poker, not getting caught up in trouble hands this session, although I played fundamentally well in that previous session.
Well, clearly...
So really not unstuck from that last session now.
Yeah. So. But he's playing well. He's building it up at this table. When you think about poker as one long session, even though you were down 700 before, you're not supposed to try to get it all back tonight. You know, you're getting some of it back. Even if you lost this hand completely and shoved, you still got a good 200 or 300 of it back tonight, and you're still playing. So, I don't know. I really feel like if he felt like they were going to shove on the turn anyway, I would not call. I would shove, make him really think about it. Mm-hmm. You know, if I knew in my heart that he was shoving on the turn, I would just shove anyway. And, you know, because it's harder to make that call when a blank comes on a turn. You know, you have one card to come. This way, you know, you got 2 coming, and you got the possibility of him folding.
Yeah, there's something to be said for only having $7 invested in this pot, too, right?
Yeah.
All right. Then he said, I figured I had 15 outs for a straight, a flush, or a straight flush, and at the time, I estimated my probability of hitting one of those 15 outs on the turn or river to be about 38%. After looking up this probability today, I realized the probability is actually 54% to hit. I would have been surprised if we weren't a favorite against really any hand.
Right.
Although I didn't specifically count my dirty outs, I considered that any better flush draw or set or 2 pair with potential fill up would counterfeit many of my outs. But it opens up other outs, I think. I only had 2 nut outs, the 10 of diamonds and the 5 of diamonds. In hindsight, I think I should have considered that the extremely large bet may have been designed to protect his hand against the flush draw or straight draws on this wet board. So maybe I could assume that I don't have any dirty flush or straight outs and only concern myself with that outs that would give a villain a full house. I was remotely contemplating the decision you had on the podcast recently about the maniac going all in on every hand and how you wouldn't want to be flipping for stacks. I assume in this case, at best, I was flipping for his stack. That's probably right. I mean, again, we're getting, you know, we'll live more than 2-to-1 on our money, which is not great. And there's nobody else, so, I mean, there's no implied odds or anything like that, so it is essentially a flip. I guess, in my opinion, I've made so much money that this is when I can afford to flip.
Yeah, I mean, if his 125 is in there now, you know, if you're thinking of it like that, where it's, okay, now it's $200 to win, what, 215, it's pretty bad odds, no matter what your cards are. But, you know, you're thinking $106,000 on a bad beat possibility, but I would never, ever think that. That is, like, the last thing in my mind. I just, for that to happen, it's so ridiculous. So I don't ever take that into consideration. So it is pretty bad pot odds, but I don't know. Sometimes you like to gamble, I guess.
But, again, if we're a favorite, then it's almost terrible to fold in, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
there's a difference between that and just a single flush draw or a single straight draw. I mean,
right.
We are a favorite here, so.
After that first card comes, though, that sucks. If you don't get it, then you're not a favorite and you're a wicked dog after that.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, no, I guess. It's still not real good pot odds.
All right, it says, after tanking for a minute, I folded face up. Said I didn't see his hand, but I thought I heard someone say that the villain also had an open-ended straight draw, but not a flush draw. Unusual semi-bluff bet sizing? I also heard muttering from a player who said he wouldn't have folded the open-ended straight flush draw. I wasn't too concerned about this comment because I didn't consider that person to be a quote-unquote thinking player. I've never been to Texas. I still think I made the right decision given the information I had, especially considering I wasn't very committed to the pot at the time of the decision and left that hand with my stack intact.
Wow.
I mean, it's hard to fault at that point. I mean, you folded a $7 hand rather than committing what would have been upwards of $200.
Yeah.
And might not get anything out of it. So, I definitely don't think it was a bad decision. But certainly I think calling was probably the best decision.
It's very difficult because, again, yeah, you might be the favorite, so any amount of money really doesn't matter if you're the favorite at that point. You know, whatever you call, you're it's a coin flip anyway. So, but I don't mind shoving either, just because what if the guy really only has a draw, and then if he only has a draw, then we're way ahead, and if he has a pair or a set, you know, we have outs. So there are a lot of scenarios. I think it might even be better than a coin flip, really, if he's on a draw. So there are some scenarios where you're way better than a coin flip against them. So I don't mind shoving there either. It's just that I know he had in the back of his mind that he had just lost 700 and didn't want to play loose poker. But you know, sometimes you gotta take chances and get some big cash in front of you. And then again, like you said, maybe the guy had a set and mixed quads, and you make your straight flush and you got a bad beat on your hands, and now you've made $50,000. You know, so.
That would have been serendipitous.
It would have been serendipitous, but not anti-penultimate.
All right, Austin Bluffs, we appreciate you sending your cash or your hand situation in, and remind everybody else to send your hands the week to podcast at antiupmagazine.com, and we'll send you something great, like we're going to send Austin today a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com. It offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the AntiUp logo version. And use code ANTIUP for free shipping.
Cool. I really want to thank our listeners this week because they really provided pretty much all the content on the show except for the main topic of Scott traveling around the world. So thanks for everything, guys. Really appreciate when you guys come through and help make the show that much better. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
AntiUp is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.